Welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing fantastic this beautiful night. The weather's been much better in Tennessee. Way less humidity. Still pretty warm for the most part, but it's got down to like the upper 50s a couple times at nighttime, which is fantastic.
Yep. It is the first day of fall. I went to Michael's today with my sister. I bought some Halloween lights on sale, so I'm pretty excited about that, and definitely feeling much better now that it's cooler out.
Yeah, I didn't realize today was the first day of fall, which is kind of sad. I'm going to miss almost the whole month of October. Like, I can't even decorate for Halloween this year.
That's a bummer.
That is kind of a
Yeah, I'm sitting here. I got my little ghost jack-o'-lantern light-up figure. I got a neon sign that says the word boo. I bought that at Michael's today. Some purple string lights. And I have my pumpkin candle burning right now. I'm soaking it all in.
I'm a little jealous. Yeah, I won't be back till like the last week of October is when I'll finally be back. And I won't have, I mean, at that point, it's kind of be up for like a week, maybe.
Yeah.
I'll make up for it for Christmas.
Oh, gosh. At least you'll be back before Halloween.
True. True. Although, unfortunately, this year I do have to work on Halloween, which is... Ugh. I know. It seems like that happens every year to me. Like, you know, I always have to work Halloween. And one of my favorite things to do is actually hand out candy to all the kids and see all the costumes and all that fun thing. But work calls sometimes.
Handing out candy to the kids, decorating your yard all spooky and stuff for them to walk up and ring your doorbell. That's a lot of fun.
We used to have we would do a graveyard out in the front yard. Nice. With all like the tombstones and like candles going down the driveway.
I did the same thing once, yeah.
Oh, really? Sweet! The one thing I haven't done that I keep telling myself that I'm going to do is set up like the adult-only station. You know, for all the parents that have to, you know, like, they're taking their kids, maybe they want a little refreshment, something along those lines, but I've never actually done it yet. I have to put that on the bucket list.
That sounds like a plan. Invite me over the year you do it.
Heck yeah. Well, listeners, I think we got a real treat for you this week. Me and Laura were talking, and one of the topics that we were talking about was some of the spookiest places in the world. And when you get to looking at it, the world is kind of a scary place. It doesn't matter what country you look at. They have some sort of haunted ruins or haunted churches or haunted lighthouses or, I mean, there's just so many to go through. So when we talked about it, I think what we're going to do this week is just pick three of our favorite ones. We'll just kind of, expand everybody's horizons just a little bit.
I'm super excited about this one because... the last couple times I've picked the subject and it hasn't really been much of a paranormal or spooky per se, been more of like a history lesson. So I'm happy to get back into this.
Yeah, I think we got some really good ones for you this time. So I'm going to let Laura take it from the top and the floor is yours.
All right. So the first one I'm going to... get into is the Fairmont Banff Springs Hotel in Canada. And it was built in 1888 to encourage tourism and sell train tickets. And it's a chateau style hotel and it's located near the Rocky Mountains in Alberta, Canada. And it became known as the Castle of the Rockies. And some of the hauntings that occur here are a ghost of a woman who had tragically died on her wedding day. She was wearing her wedding dress and she had walked next to some candles that were by the staircase. And somehow her dress caught on fire and she fell down the steps and broke her neck, which is terrible. She still haunts the hotel and guests have seen her dancing in the ballroom. Some even report that they have seen her in flames as she danced. Here is another one that's a little less tragic. There was this guy named Sam. He was the bellhop there from 1960 to 1975 when he stopped working. And before he left, he said that when he eventually died and passed away, he would come back and haunt the place. So guests have seen exactly that. They have encountered him while checking into the hotel. He will unlock rooms for them, turn on lights, help them carry bags, and it's said that he's mostly seen on the 9th floor for whatever reason, and if you try to talk to him or even tip him, he will just vanish.
I wonder what the 9th floor had to do with.
Yeah, I know. I was wondering that too. So the last one I came across for this one was that the spirit of a bartender hangs out at the bar and he will notice if a guest has had too much to drink. So he will suggest that they head to bed, which I think is a nice thing because he's still looking out for people.
Pretty interesting one. You said that one was located in the Rockies?
Yeah, but in the Canada side. Oh, the
Canadian Rockies. Okay. Yeah, that'd be really cool. I'll have to look that one up. I'd like to see the pictures for that one. Like what, kind of what it looks like.
Yeah, it's very fancy.
I can imagine so. Kind of a creepy place to spend the night.
A little bit.
The first one that I have is called Larnach Castle, and it is located in New Zealand. William Larnach, he wanted his castle to be a happy family home. He'd spent a lot of time building it. It took him almost 15 years to complete this place because of where it was located, and he spared no expense. He brought the best materials over, and this was his forever home. However, once the house was completed and they moved in there, tragedy had struck. His daughter, Kate, died of illness in just her 20s. He lost his first wife, Eliza, at the age of 38. Larnach then went on to marry his late wife's half-sister, but she too died at 38. After William married his third wife, he decided to go into politics, but he never was really that good of a politician. In fact, when he started speculating as a politician, he was caught by it. And he was accused of taking bribes and things along those lines. And he actually committed suicide in New Zealand's Parliament building in October 1898 by shooting himself in the head. In this particular Larnach Castle, it's haunted by several spirits. The spirits aren't violent, but they're always amused with all the visitors invading their space. One story is a couple got pushed apart while entering Constance's room. It's said that there's a room there where her wedding dress is on display, and that when people walk into the room, that room's way colder than all the rest of the castles, just because that room's dedicated to her. Another one is said William himself is said to haunt his former home. A male figure was seen around the castle. And also, just to add a little bit more to that William's remains was actually disturbed after he was buried. His skull was even stolen as a trophy. In 1972, William Larnach's skull was found in a student's dorm room. The student showed the skull, complete with the hole in the head, to his friends on many occasions. Of course, the kid didn't get any trouble for it, but they did confiscate it and return it back. So we talk a lot about, when the dead are disturbed and whatnot, and maybe they come back and haunt, if they're not resting peacefully. I think if my skull was stolen, I'd want to haunt my castle too, to be fair.
Your castle? I'd go haunt that kid.
But think about it. Most people are tied to places that they have strong feelings for. And William spent all this time and had all this heartache at this home of his. To me, it seems like he would be more apt to be there than it would be the student himself. Because they said that even then, it said the student didn't steal it. They didn't know who had stolen it. The student just kind of ended up with the skull.
Yeah, but how do you just end up with a skull?
Unfortunately, they didn't really clear that part up, which it would be kind of interesting to know. But the last little one for this Larnach Castle is, and this is a pretty good story, so I'm going to just quote it directly as it was written. So in 1994, 100 people were invited to the ballroom of Larnach Castle to witness a play called Castle of Lies. When the performance started, a strong and not predicted storm started outside. The wind was so strong it blew right into the fireplaces, causing small white particles to be blown into the ballroom. Hail began to crash into the iron roof loudly, and when the performers got to the part where William Larnach shot himself, a flash of lightning shot through the room. Many guests thought it was part of the play, but it was not. I picked this one just for that little blurb there, because that's really cool. If a ghost could actually cause a thunderstorm and lightning to flash in the room, that's pretty spectacular.
I haven't heard anything like that. That's really neat.
Yeah, that's one of the more interesting ones that I come across, that reading through these.
Yeah, that's cool.
Can you imagine being in that room? Like, you're going to see a play, you're in this old castle, and, you know, I could see where some people would think it was part of the...
Oh, completely,
And then to find out later on, I'm sure somebody told later on, this is not planned at all.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Crazy.
What a good find.
I like it, though.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So the next one that I chose is very well known as the Suicide Forest of Japan, but it's actually called, and I did look up pronunciation, so I'm going to try, Akigahara Forest in Japan. And it's located at the foot of Mount Fuji, which is the highest mountain in Japan. The forest measures 30 square kilometers, which equals 18 square miles. The forest sits on top of volcanic rock from the eruption of Mount Fuji in the year of 864, which is very, like, it's just weird to say that, the year 864. But anyways, So Mount Fuji is considered a sacred place for more than 1,000 years. Buddhist monks have gone to the forest and practiced extreme forms of self-denial and meditation that ended their life. There was another part of this tradition that said that they would go there for 1,000 days, surviving on just the leaves and bark of trees, and they would eventually become buried alive and continue meditating in an underground crypt. And the goal was to transform the body while still being alive into mummy form. But however, scientists believe that they were mummified after their death. So I'm not really sure. It wasn't really clear on how they became buried alive. I don't know if it was just from them just laying down on the floor of the forest and just everything falling on top of them, or if they actually did have people come bury them under something.
Could you imagine being buried alive like that?
No, thank you. This is
I'll pass.
Very scary. So the forest was known as the Sea of Trees, now known as Suicide Forest. Nearly 100 suicides a year, and that was as of January 2022. It is home of Yuri, which translates to Japanese ghosts and demons in Japanese mythology. So what basically started this was the haunting of this forest was said that the Japanese would take the elders that were dependent on them and could no longer, you know, help the family do anything, would take them out to the forest and just leave them there to die. Many dispute that senicide was ever common in Japanese culture. So senicide is basically the murder of elderly people, like neglect or just abandonment. And it says that visitors would claim to see ghosts in the forest, and they were thought to be the spirits of the people who were elderly and were abandoned there. And in the 1950s, visitors began reporting of decomposing bodies. And in the 1960s, there was a book that was written by a Japanese author, and the book was called Tower of Waves. And long story short, the book ended with a woman walking into the forest to die. And many movies were based off of this book. And the talk of suicide in the forest began to spread, and the legend of ghosts in the forest were said to be those who came to the forest to take their own life. So somehow, within that time frame, the ghosts became the ones who went to the forest to commit suicide, and it wasn't really known as the elderly haunting the forest anymore. So somewhere in there, it kind of switched. Whether or not whichever one is correct, I don't know. Then in the 1970s, police and volunteers began to do an annual search to recover bodies. By 1993, a Japanese author had published a book called The Complete Suicide Manual. It gave ways of how to complete it, and a section in the book spoke about the forest, saying, quote, is the perfect place to die. and many of the bodies in the forest were found laying next to this book. Japan is known for one of the places with the highest suicide rate, and in 1998, there were more than 32,000 deaths just in the country alone. And then in 2003, there were 34,427 deaths. And the rise and fall of the economy is what's said to impact this number. And just alone in the forest, 108 bodies were found in different stages of decay in 2004. So now keep in mind that this was the only amount of bodies they were able to recover. And the forest is built off of a volcanic rock, and the tree roots are very twisted and tangled. It's very dark, heavy, dense forest. So the chances of getting lost in here are extremely possible. So there could be way more bodies than that. I don't know. And then just as of recently, the last couple of years, Japan stopped releasing the numbers of suicides of bodies that they would find in the forest because they would hope that it would start to discourage people from going into this forest. Now, when you go there, there are signs that are placed at the entrance saying to reconsider your decision if this is what you're going there to do. And there's also people there that patrol outside of the forest that if you look like this is what you're going there to do, they ask them to reconsider their decision and try to get them not to go in. So when people actually hike in this forest, they will often tie a string or a ribbon or a rope to their starting point so that they can find their way out. Some of the deaths in the forest may not have been suicide. They may have just been an accident that they could not find their way back out, because it's also said that there's large underground deposits of iron that would interfere with compasses. So it's very easy to get lost in this place. So now, I don't know if you've ever seen any, like, footage of this forest, but I've seen it on YouTube, and it's crazy the amount of personal items that are left. There's tents, they find leftover drug paraphernalia, shoes, umbrellas, just anything. It's really, really sad.
That sounds very sad. I mean, could you imagine, like, you decide you want to go hiking through these woods and you don't know anything about the stories behind it? There's a better than even chance you're going to come across a dead body.
I find this place so interesting, not in, like, a, you know, I don't want to, how do I say it without sounding morbid? It's just curious to me why so many people go to this place. Is there something that draws them to this area that's a greater power than this is just the place where you go to do something like this?
Could also be, you know, they've heard the stories over the years, because I'm sure in Japan that, and this is just an assumption, that, you know, a lot of people would know about this forest. I'm sure it's not a national secret, so, you know, if they're having a bad day, they're like, well, you know, maybe they had somebody they knew went there and did that, and they just want to kind of use the same place. Like, you know, that person found it helpful to do it that way. Maybe, I don't know. That's a really sad story. I mean, it really is, because it is a spooky one because of, you know, all the heartache and pain that's been through there. But, like, at the same point, it's kind of, it's kind of pretty sad, too.
I thought maybe by kind of diving into this, I would find a little more things of maybe some kind of evil something drawing people in, but it just seems more that it's like this talked about place, and it just became this thing where everybody goes to.
Ugh. That's, you know, it might make for a decent episode to really go a little bit farther with that one. Because I know there's a lot of information about that wood. I've never really looked into it myself, but I've heard of it, like, from different contacts before. I might save that for another episode.
I was thinking the same thing, because it was really hard to gather enough information to tell the story, but I just kept finding more and more on it.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's absolutely a good one. Yeah. So the next one that I have, this one's a little more lighthearted than that one, but it's called Bonaventure Cemetery, and it's located in Savannah, Georgia. And when I was going through there reading all the things, there's a lot. Let's just start off with Savannah, Georgia has a ton of ghost stories anyways, just for all the history they've been through, the Civil War, World War, well, mostly Civil War, but I mean, it was also there for the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812. So there's a lot of history involved with Savannah, but I found a couple kind of lighthearted things to go along with it that, and I didn't know this thing. So let me just dive right in here. So it is rumored that people have been buried alive at Bonaventure Cemetery. And before modern technology, such as heart monitors, sometimes people in comas or with a low pulse rate were mistakenly buried alive. Although it's a fairly rare occurrence, there is proof that this did happen on occasion. As evidence, we have found scratch marks inside of caskets where bodies have been exhumed or ransacked by grave robbers. So what they would do is, in order to prevent this from happening, a string would be tied to the finger of the deceased and attached to a bell next to the grave, which is where the phrase, quote-unquote, saved by the bell came from. I did not know that. Kind of interesting. But it goes on. There's even more. The family would pay somebody to watch the grave, which is where the term graveyard shift originated from. Didn't know that one either. Kind of cool. Another one of these types of tropes are, it's also why families began holding a wake to ensure their loved ones didn't wake up before being buried.
Okay, I didn't know that one.
Yeah, I got one more that's, it kind of goes along with this. If you're familiar with the phrase dead ringer, it is referring to somebody that resembles a deceased person as if they came back from the dead. I was going through this stuff and this was located on one of the websites that I looked at. And I was just like, I didn't know this stuff.
I had thought that the term dead ringer came from they would tie the string to your toe, and if you moved it, then the bell would ring, and that's where dead ringer came from.
Could be. Could. Now, I have heard dead ringer as a comparing you to somebody, like being...
Oh, absolutely, close, yeah.
You know, yeah, mm-hmm. That's the only way I've heard that particular one.
Me too.
Before. If you ever go to the cemetery, there is a ton. It's a fairly large cemetery. I didn't actually get the size, but it must be fairly large. One of the things they talk about there is all the different monuments that are around the different grave sites, the gravestones, and there's a lot of symbolism in here. So, for instance, if you see a statue of a stump at a grave, it means their life was cut short. Some of the other symbolisms that you'll find is at the feet of the statue. If the feet are bare, then it means that the person who is buried there is walking with Jesus. If you see a statue of an angel, it shows the deceased was welcomed safely into heaven in the afterlife. It is also common to see grave markers in the shape of a small cradle, indicating the grave of a child. If the lettering on the headstone is raised instead of engraved, it is a sign of wealth. Obelisks were also a sign of wealth. The taller the obelisk, the more wealth was displayed, and it became a sort of status symbol and contest to see who could erect the tallest obelisk.
Oh my gosh.
Even in death, rich people got to have the biggest thing.
That's exactly what I was just going to say, even in death.
Even in death. But the one big story, then one of the reasons that a lot of people go to this particular cemetery is to see the grave of Gracie. So she's probably one of the most famous residents, quote unquote, of Bonaventure Cemetery. So the story goes that she's basically... she was a six-year-old girl, and her parents managed the prestigious Pulaski Hotel in Savannah, where Gracie played. She would sing and laugh and smile and dance, and you know, all the patrons at the hotel loved her. However, in 1889, when Gracie was only 6 years old, she fell ill with a fatal case of pneumonia and died just days before Easter. Her parents were utterly distraught and commissioned the famed sculptor John Waltz to carve a statue with her exact likeness, even down to her favorite dress. And that statue is still there today. It's right on top of her grave. So you also find that, and this is kind of why I went into a little bit of symbolism. So her monument also includes a tree cut in half, symbolizing a life cut short. You'll also find ivy climbing towards heaven and her eyes looking up towards heaven where she rests in peace. The iron gate surrounding her burial plot is lined with toys, flowers, coins. Small gifts are left by visitors wishing to her peace and comfort in the afterlife. After Gracie's passing, her mother and other hotel staff claimed they heard her laughing and singing, echoing throughout the halls of the hotel and under the back stairs where she loved to play. The Pulaski Hotel was eventually demolished, and then there was a cafe built in its place. After that, the cafe was converted to a Regions Bank, which is on Johnson Square, where patrons and workers claim to still hear her laughter inside the bank. Rumor has it that she plays pranks on unsuspecting people, like pulling makeup out of women's purses. Some have even seen the apparition of a young girl in the 1880s attire wandering around the bank and other locations around Savannah. It is also said that if you take any of the gifts left at her grave, then her statue will cry tears of blood. And that is the story of Gracie Watkins.
Wow.
I would really enjoy going to that cemetery, and I'd probably spend a lot of time there, because like the history stuff like that, and there was a lot more. I mean, there's actually Jews from the Holocaust that are buried in the cemetery. There are soldiers for World War I, World War II, the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812. Like, this cemetery is substantial. And I think it would be really, really neat just to go there to see, you know, what kind of little Easter eggs you could find. And you're like, since you know the symbolism of the statues, you could say, oh, well, these people must have been rich, or, you know, maybe they weren't rich, or, you know, this guy had the biggest obelisk, so he must have been the richest guy in the cemetery. I think that would be kind of a fun trip, for sure.
Yeah.
And that ghost story is kind of a little more lighthearted. You know, it's even though the girl passed away quite suddenly, you know, she's not scaring people. She's still having fun in it. You know, she's still laughing. She's still playing. She's playing pranks. Kind of like what she did in life.
I would definitely go to that graveyard. That would be really interesting to check that out. That was a good one. There's a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah, I like that one. That was a good one. All right, what do you got for me?
All right, so my last one is my favorite one, which is why I saved it for last, which is, this one is mostly lighthearted. This reminds me of the episode that we just did on the Aztecs, and this is from Xunatunich, Belize. This place is located less than a mile from the Guatemalan border, deep in the jungle, and it is an ancient Mayan ruin that was destroyed by an earthquake. The civilization was rediscovered in the 1890s. It is an archaeological site as well as a little-known tourist attraction. It's said to be haunted by a black-haired lady with red glowing eyes. And I also found another site that said she was wearing white. So that goes along with a woman in white.
The woman in white?
She was seen by one of the earliest research teams in 1893. She was seen by near El Castillo, the tallest building in the complex, and she's known as the Stone Lady. They speculate that she could have been a victim in human sacrifice in a death ritual that took place on top of this pyramid. It's also said that there are shapeshifters that are seen in this area known as Shitabai, an evil spirit that hides in the trunk of a ceiba tree. If you catch a glimpse of a beautiful woman combing her long hair, or you hear a whisper of a love song or phrase, do not look up. If you do, she will call you closer so that she can embrace you. Being unable to resist her, you will do so and fall into a deep sleep. When you wake up, if you do wake up, you will find that you really have been asleep hugging this tree all night, which is like a spiny cactus-like tree. Lesions from this can also cause fever, resulting in death. And other shapeshifters in this area can be seen in the form of a snake. So the very last one that people will see is the Tata Duende, which is a mythical goblin from folklore. And he is said to protect animals and the jungle. So if you hear a whistle in the forest, hide your thumbs as quick as you can.
My thumbs?
Yes. And I'll tell you why. So he is described okay. as a short, ugly man, a little over a meter in height, with a scrunched up face, missing his thumbs. wearing a wide-brimmed red hat wearing animal skins. Since he has no thumbs, he wants to rip the thumbs off of anyone he sees who does have thumbs. You are supposed to fold your thumbs into your palms as quick as you can and hide them, and if you do this fast enough and he does not see your thumbs, he will take a liking to you and consider you a comrade for that you too are thumbless. And if he likes you enough, he will teach you how to play his silver guitar.
I would like to see somebody play guitar with no thumbs.
That was my first thought. Like, how does that work?
I mean, I'm sure it's possible. Hopefully somebody will correct me. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible.
Oh, I'm sure it's possible. People do amazing things. But yeah, that's all I've got for that one. But that story of the Duende was my favorite, I think, throughout all this research.
Yeah, that's a pretty haunted place, yeah. To be fair.
I would not want to see the stone lady with glowing red eyes.
I think, to be honest, I don't want to see any of them. I mean, none of them sound that particularly pleasant. You know,
no.
I'm kind of partial to my thumbs.
Yeah.
I don't play the guitar, but yeah, I mean, if you could teach me, that'd be kind of fun. You know, why not, right?
Like, God forbid you slip up and accidentally let your thumb stick out, and then he rips them off.
Yes, that would be terrifying. All right, for the last one that I have, and this is one that some people may have heard of this one. It's a fairly famous place. It's the story of the St. Augustine Lighthouse. It's a very long story. It was initially built back in the 1600s by the Spanish. The British took it over for a while. The Americans had it for a while. The Spanish had it for a while. The Americans got it back. But after the Civil War is kind of where this story is going to start, because the original lighthouse was where they placed it, so close to the ocean. The ocean was starting to erode the banks away, and the lighthouse was in danger of it to falling into the sea, like it wasn't going to be able to be used anymore. So in 1871, the American government decided to build a new lighthouse there. The man that they hired to rebuild the lighthouse, or to build a new lighthouse there, his name was Ezekiel Pitti, and he moved from Cape Elizabeth, Maine, with his family to oversee the construction of the new St. Augustine Lighthouse. Ezekiel lived on site with his wife Mary and their children. Their children's name was Mary Adeline, Eliza, Edward, and Carrie. And just as children would do, the Pitti children turned the construction site into a playground, inviting the children of the other workers into their fun. By 1873, so it's 2 years going, only the foundation and 42 feet of the 165-foot tower were completed. A railway cart moved the supplies from the supply ship docked at Salt Run to the building site. Riding the cart down to the water was a favorite pastime of the Pitti children. They used to ride the cart as a Victorian... Oh, excuse me. They used the cart as a Victorian-era roller coaster, riding the cart to the water and bringing it back up to the site to ride again. Only a wooden board at the end of the rail stopped the cart from tipping over into the water. On July 10th of 1873, the three Pitti sisters, Mary, Eliza, and Carrie... let's see, it says Mary was 15, Eliza was 13, and Carrie was 4, along with an unknown African-American girl who was 10, whose father may have worked at the site, were riding the cart as normal. The wooden board that stopped the cart from going in the water was not in place. The cart carrying the girls slipped into the water, trapping the girls underneath. Mr. Dan Sessions, a young African-American worker, witnessed the tragic event and raced to the water. When he reached the cart, using all his strength, he lifted it from on top of the girls. By this time, three of the four girls had drowned, and the only survivor was the youngest, Carrie. In the days after the accident, the construction site as well as the town shut down for the funeral of the girls, and following the funeral, the Pitti family returned to Maine to lay their daughters down in their hometown. So that's kind of the background of the ghosts that haunt this place. It would be the three Pitti sisters. It goes on to say, a little bit later on in the article, that as playful spirits, the girls enjoy playing hide-and-seek, sometimes including unsuspecting people. One night in the dark lighthouse tower, a lone staff member was closing up for the night. He heard giggling at the top of the tower. Thinking that he had left someone on top of the tower, he returned to the top to find it empty. As he began to head back down the tower, he heard the same giggles below him. Descending to the bottom, he once again found no one was there. Another one was a female guest was standing on the first step of the metal lighthouse staircase, and when she went to go take her first step to climb the tower, she found her shoelaces tied to the staircase. And the last one I got for you, the girls sometimes appear to family in fully formed apparitions. Several years ago during the day, a guest was exploring the Maritime Hammock Trails and came across a young girl in a Victorian outfit sitting on the bench reading a book. As she began to ask the girl a question, another group came up from the opposite direction. Distracted by the group, the woman looked away for only a moment and turned back to find the little girl on the bench gone. In a similar instance, a woman on a ghost tour approached another woman to compliment her daughter's behavior on the tour. Confused, the woman said she had no daughter. The other woman then told her that a little girl had been standing by her for most of the evening. There were no children on the tour that evening. So, that is the story of the St. Augustine Lighthouse.
That's really sad.
It is very sad, but I think this is another one where the ghosts are not vengeful. And they're not evil, I guess is the right word for it. You know, they're more... doing the same thing they did in life, you know, was to be, you know, maybe a little mischievous, you know, having a little fun at people's expenses. And I kind of like this. I kind of like the happier ghost stories.
Yeah, me too. It's just sad that they, I don't know, they seem happy though.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, that's another one of the apparitions that where they can actually, affect the physical world. You know, if you can tie somebody's shoelace, that's a pretty good indication you can affect things.
Yeah, they probably have quite a bit of energy if they can do that.
And considering that was in 1873, so we're talking about 150-ish years ago, almost, this past July.
Wow.
Right? 2023? Yeah, that's 150 years. Holy moly. That's kind of coincidental.
It just made me laugh because my sister and I, on our way to Michael's, we were talking about, I don't even know where it came from, but we were saying, you ever see those memes where it's like, 1980s was 20 years ago? You're like, hold on, wait a minute. No. And then we were like, wait, 40 years ago? And we're like, holy jeez.
Yeah.
It's scary how fast time goes.
Yep. I mean, you could think of another one, too. And I hope I don't mess with up, but Cleopatra, which was, you've heard her from it, like Egypt's history.
Mm-hmm.
Cleopatra lived closer to today than she did to when the pyramids were built. Just think about that one for a second.
That's really weird.
But this was been a very, very interesting episode. I've learned a lot today.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I look forward to digging into some other haunted places for sure.
We do have a fairly good list to go through.
Yeah, well, that wraps this one up. And you guys know where to find us, midnight_inthemountains@yahoo.com. Send us your true paranormal stories. We will read them on the show. Find us on Instagram at midnight_inthemountains. And that's all I got for you.
I just have one quick question before we sign off. Did anybody post any pictures of their bowl haircuts?
No, they didn't. I'm
so disappointed.
Oh my God.
All right, Laura. It was a pleasure as always. And we will see everybody soon.
All righty.
Halloween, this is Halloween. Pumpkin scream in the dead of is Halloween.